called order on April 17th. First bill up for public hearing, possible work session, is open public hearing on House Bill 2938. Mr. Keller.
Thank you, sir. We last heard House Bill 2938 on March 20th. It increases the amount of property tax exemption for disabled veterans and surviving spouses of war veterans to $25,000 in value of homestead or personal property tax. The committee requested what the current revenue impact is. I have attached the preliminary revenue statement and the preliminary fiscal statement. This bill has a referral to revenue.
Okay. Mr. O'Reilly, please.
Yes, revenue.
That's because he's got a referral. I'm going to refer to Kelly.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, my name is Kevin O'Reilly. I'm here representing the members of the Oregon Paralyzed Veterans of America. And as you are all aware, the Oregon Paralyzed Veterans of America represents both non-service and service-connected veterans with significant disabilities. We fully support this bill, but we would like the committee to consider raising the exemption, the property tax exemption, up to $50,000 for the service-connected veteran and lifting the income limits for the non-service, or at least raising it up to a higher level than it currently is. Okay. And if there's any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Are there any questions? Okay, no. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so. Okay, close the public hearing and open the work hearing on House Bill 2839. Is there a motion? 2938, I transposed that.
Mr. Chair, I move 2938 to the Committee on Revenue with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Scott moves House Bill 2938 to the Committee on Revenue with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Run into some roadblocks because of the money, but I'll vote for it.
Yeah, we're sending it to revenues.
Yeah.
Now, call the roll, please.
It's going to revenue.
Representative Gilchrist?
Yes.
Representative
Cowan? Yes.
Representative Shockler?
He's nodding his head.
Representative Scott?
Aye.
Chair Barker?
Aye. Motion carries. Work session on House Bill 2938 is closed. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 3294.
Just want to make sure that the committee has the dash three amendments.
And Mr. Keller, could you give us a rundown on that?
Yes, sir. House Bill 3294 directs the Director of Veterans Affairs to consult with county veterans officers when carrying out certain actions. We have a dash three amendment which replaces the bill, changes the definition of veteran, removes administration of all present and future federal law, changes the requirement and nomination process for the advisory committee, adds other conflicts where costly agents were used, remove the recording fee for veteran requesting a record from the county, restricts access to the veteran's information, creates an appeal process when veteran is denied assistance through the Oregon Veterans Emergency Financial Assistance Program, changes the certification program for veteran service officers to education program, changes the distribution formula to county governing bodies.
Okay, thank you. Let's see, we have Katie Harris and Frank Breyer. Start out with please just go ahead and say your name and
Representative Chair, my name is Katie Harris. I'm with Oregon County Veterans Service Officers Association.
And my name is Frank Fryer. I'm also with the Oregon County Veterans Service Officers Association.
Okay. Go ahead, please.
No, go ahead.
Well, we want to thank you for this opportunity today. I'd like to touch on Section 17, the education for CVSOs. Changes the certification program to an education program. The department already has an agreement between the federal VA in order to accredit county veteran service officers. There are certain criteria and standards that need to be met in order for accreditation. We feel that education, continuing education rather than a duplicative certification program, would be a much better use of this this area. Also, the distribution formula. The distribution formula has been something in the past that has taken up a lot of time last session and this session, and we feel that these changes will alleviate any future time that it would take up to use in order to come up with an equitable distribution formula for CVSOs.
Okay, thank you.
Go ahead.
And I'll take care of the rest of the bill pretty much. The Veterans Advisory Committee changes are focused primarily on getting a greater pool of veterans that are involved throughout the state. As it is right now, it's my understanding that the service organizations make recommendations to the governor on members of the advisory committee. And there's, if someone is not a member of the service organization or is not at least familiar with the members of the service organization, they're not in any kind of line to be able to get into that position to help the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs make proper decisions on the basis of all veterans throughout the state, not just veterans who may or may not be affiliated with service organizations. The attorney representation provisions of this regulation statute, we feel are important. One of the reasons is that this has been on the books for a long time. There's no funding involved with it right now. It could be funded, but it isn't right now. However, taking it off would take one benefit away from a possible benefit away from veterans. Recently, the federal government expanded when attorneys could get involved with claims, and for the state to now take away that possibility of attorney representation at a local level, I think would be injurious to veterans who have particularly complicated legalistic claims. The cause of agent sections that are being changed, or really not being changed, are being added to. The old statute wasn't comprehensive enough. There were cause of agents, Agent Blue, Agent Orange, other defoliants used throughout Southeast Asia, used in Korea on the DMZ, and they were probably used throughout the world, but we don't know specifically about that yet. This would expand that coverage for any veteran who's affected by those agents. And finally, the privacy of records for veterans. As it is now, veterans are encouraged to take their discharge to the county clerk's office to get them certified and registered. And also, as it is right now, those records are open to anybody in the country, in the state, who wants to go to county clerk's office, bring up the name of a veteran, and ask for the separation papers. Those separation papers, in many cases, contain plenty of personal information to allow identity thefts. As there's been in the news recently, not only is identity theft going on against all citizens, but there are more and more people pretending to be veterans, and we don't feel that access to those records, we feel that limited access to those records would help curtail that. And I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Okay, any questions for me? Ready?
Question.
Yes,
Representative. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The first remarks that you were making regarding attorney. Could you refer me to what section of the bill page or something?
Page 611, section 11.
Okay. Thank you. I'm sorry. I wasn't keeping up with you there quickly enough.
That's presently in the statute, but it hasn't been used for 11 years now.
Okay.
Mr. Keller, maybe you can help remind me on that. Didn't we eliminate
because the lawyers hadn't been used?
Yes, sir. We passed House Bill 2160 out of this committee. It's at the Speaker's desk awaiting signature. And we repealed, or the bill repealed, 406-410 and 406-420 and 406-430.
Okay, so that would be a problem in this one. We need to get that adjusted. So thank
Got
you.
It. Okay, thank you.
Okay, any further questions? Thank you, panel. And then next, call Mr. McDonald, Sterrell Austin, and Mr. Willis, please.
Morning, Mr. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. My name is Matt McDonald. I represent the United Veterans of Oregon, which is every federally registered veterans organization and some that are not. We oppose this bill. We think it's micromanagement of the Department of Veterans Affairs, and we were not consulted one iota on this bill prior to it being written. In fact, I just got it 3 hours ago. I'd like to point out on page 1, line 19, other than dishonorable discharge should be changed to, if you're going to keep it, active duty and released under honorable conditions. Because the way this reads, some of the bad conduct discharge, undesirable discharge, etc., would get the same benefits, which are not given under the federal law. On page 2, what they want taken out would prevent... is the only thing we have to prevent a political appointment to the Director of Veterans Affairs. And that's with the result of the Advisory Committee must, under the present law, approve of the new Veterans Director of Veterans Affairs. We want that to remain in. We want to have some say on who the new Director of Veterans Affairs would be at any time he'd be appointed. And that way we keep the organization of the Veterans Administration non-political. Under line 15 on the same page, they want to take out federal and state laws pertaining to, and they want to take out war veterans. The Director of Veterans Affairs must administer federal laws. In fact, we're loaded with them at the veterans home. That should remain in. Under the next section 2, subsection 2, that's already in existence. That part is repetition to what's already law. They want to take out war veterans out of section 6. We oppose that. You go to the next page, they talk about on page 3. Other powers and duties of the director. His powers and duties are already directed by law. So what they're doing is trying to micromanage the department. Under Section 8, the Department of Veterans Affairs may utilize services and facilities of any state agency in the course of administration of any law of the state enacted for the benefit and welfare of, they want to take out war veterans, welfare of war veterans and their dependents. That's already in existence, so we're duplicating again. We go to page 5. I think the governor would be upset if he couldn't appoint the Director of Veterans Affairs, and all that's in italicized wording should remain in effect, and we have a better organization if it does remain in effect. On line 19 through 22 should remain in effect. It's talking about the requirements of the advisory committee. It's and line 23 through 30 talks about appointment of that individual. That should all remain in effect. I don't know why they would possibly want to take it out. On line 6 through 14, again, should stay in the law as it is. I have no idea why they would want to take it out. And as I stated earlier, we were not consulted on this amendment whatsoever. I don't know why they would want to take out federal on line 16, since federal laws affect veterans and the Director of Veterans Affairs has to follow the federal law. The part on attorneys on section 11, there's a bill before the legislature now that takes out the attorney's use by the director. And that goes over to page 7. The obtaining of legal counsel, I don't believe, is necessary. We have National Veteran Service Officers and Service Officers, and I think legal obtaining legal counsel on line 25, page 7, should be taken out. The lines they want to remove on page 8, 14 through 19, should remain in effect, since people they're talking about there are still living. On section 15, it's not needed. The director already has directions on how he's going to handle the emergency fund, and he has administrative rules that cover who gets the money and who doesn't. On line 10, on page 10, everything in italics there should remain in effect because it pertains to the Guard people today and it pertains to Oregon residents today, including reservists. On line 19, we feel that certification should remain in there. I don't care how much education you get, if you don't understand it and you can't pass a test that would certify you, I don't want to go before that person to get veterans benefits if he doesn't understand what he's been told. Certification needs to remain in there and education needs to be removed. And competency would remain. And the part taken out about competency on lines 20 and 21 should remain in the bill. On the distribution of funds to county veteran service officers, we went through this last year. We had public hearings both here and at ODVA. An agreement came out that by administrative rule how the funds should be administered, and the United Veterans of Oregon support that rule. We want to see no changes to it. And basically, we think this law, with amendment, should be tabled. We think it's a bad law. It's bad for veterans in every way under the sun. We were not consulted on it. And county veteran service officers or whoever wrote this, I think, are doing an injustice to veterans. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. McDonald?
Yeah, I got a couple. Okay. Just to make sure I understand here. And for the record, unfortunately, Mac, I don't get to see 99% of all amendments either, so that doesn't hold a whole lot of water. But let me make sure I understand and you understand what you just said. You're saying that the Oregon Department of Veterans should only serve war veterans.
No.
With service in war.
Basically, anyone from the Korean War on is considered a war veteran, I believe. Mr. Willis, could you hand?
No. Help. War veteran are people who served in a war.
Right. So there is language that has, some language needs to be cleaned up here, because technically, correct me if I'm wrong, somebody, we are, in the gracious of our heart and the intent, we're all providing services to veterans that technically under the law aren't supposed to get it. And so there are some things that do need to be cleaned up. So
well,
it's more of a comment than anything else, and I guess we can let them go on with their testimony, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Boquist, for the record, Jim Willis, Director of the Department of Veterans Affairs. There is an argument that those individuals who served in a war era are in fact war veterans.
And I've heard that argument on both sides. In other words, if you were in the military between 1950 and 53, you could consider yourself a Korean War era veteran without having ever set foot in Korea. Having said that, and not to put too fine a point on it, to me, we're here to serve veterans, whether they were Cold War, peacetime, whatever. So if that clarifies that, then I welcome a clarification.
Right.
In the law.
My point is that it does say, I just pulled the ORS. I had never noticed this before after 2 years of this, but it does say, you know, they serve war veterans only in here. So there is some technical, so probably some cleanup law language that needs to be done. So thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Austin?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Starl Austin. I currently serve as a member of the Governor's Advisory Committee to the Director of Veterans Affairs. I also served 4 years as the Director of Veterans Affairs from 1981 through 1984. I served 17 years before that at the State Military Department in the job that General Caldwell holds now. I'm opposed to this bill for a number of reasons, many of which have already been stated here, so I won't repeat them. I was really upset when I read on page 8 that World War II veterans are no longer veterans. I flew 58 combat missions in World War II, and I kind of feel like a veteran. My personal reaction to this bill is that the original bill ought to be tabled, and if the correction that Representative Boquist is talking about needs to be made concerning war veterans, it'll be made elsewhere. Thank you. If there are any questions, I'll be glad to try to respond.
Mr. Chair, I just want to get on the record. I'm not voting for anything that says World War II veterans aren't veterans. I wanted to make everybody clear there.
Thank you. Mr. Willis, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record again, my name is Jim Willis, Director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. It is difficult for me to comment on the dash 3 to this bill because of the ground that it covers, and I think the word micromanage was used before, and I don't mind being managed, but I think it has to be done in a reasoned and necessary way. So let me just touch on a couple things, if I may. I am already required in statute, and happily so, to consult with the Association of Oregon Counties with regard to the statutes that impact all counties and all county veteran service officers. When I first saw this bill, I found it very interesting that subordinate employees are now to be included under the umbrella of the Association of Oregon Counties, which is the body that's required to be accountable for the funds that we're passing through. That goes directly to the county boards. And now to add the county veteran service officers is quite a surprise to me, and here's why. All during the interim, I have communicated with the leadership of the Oregon County Veteran Service Officers Association. I also gave them the department-requested budget at the very beginning of the budget process. They've also been provided then with governor's recommended. There have been no secrets from these folks in terms of what our intent was to continue the funding to enhance and expand veteran services within the counties in Oregon. In fact, I testified in favor of it in the 2005 session, very strongly again in this session, and I will continue to do so with some conditions that were in the law and are proposed to be removed from this one. And that is that it appears to me that, without going into the specifics of the amendment, that certain members of the county veteran service officers would simply like the state to pass through the money with no accountability and no ability to measure the outcomes. As a matter of fact, on the very last page of this amendment, the very last page, which I think is page 10, the very last change that's proposed here, or excuse me, I guess it's page 12. I apologize. It says on line 11, that we should eliminate the establishment of service outcomes for county veteran service officers. That slays me as to why anyone would want to do that when, in fact, these outcomes are reasonably easy to measure. And I believe can be agreed upon between my department and the County Veteran Services Association. The other thing that I don't understand is the elimination of the word certification in favor of the word education. When you heard testimony today that this is a duplicate effort, I simply respectfully disagree, and here's why. Today, it takes about 2 years to become a veteran service officer that has the competency in which to serve veterans. It's a continual learning process. There are many, many changes to the codified federal regulations and to Title 38 and the work of the Federal Veterans Appeal Board and so on and so forth, trial board. Those are things people have to keep up with on a regular basis in order to properly serve the veterans and certainly in order to carry their power of attorney, where you are in receipt of very private information having to do with finances, having to do with medical records, having to do with personal history and military service. Therefore, the current status is that you get about 2 years training. You can take the accreditation test, which is 30 questions. Once you take that 30-question test, you become a federally accredited veteran service officer. Our department then is responsible for conducting education classes, training classes, if you will, and we do that. We never again test the competency of the people after they receive their accreditation. Different from that is the National Service Office, veteran service officers, those who work for the American Legion, the VFW, the DAV, Purple Heart, and so on. They are tested annually, at least once. So the certification program is far beyond the one-time accreditation. Nor would we develop the administrative rules to administer a certification program without the input of the Joint Training Committee. The training we currently provide is agreed upon by the County Veteran Service Officers and my staff. Also in here, you'll notice on line 22 of page 10 that they removed language that says that we can provide the training and education necessary to allow veteran service officers, and then they eliminated and other individuals to assist veterans. So that means when we put these training classes on, are we then restricted from bringing in national service officers for an update? Am I restricted from training my own people that are accredited veteran service officers? You've heard much testimony already from others. I will tell you that this is a bad bill. The Dash 3 amendment is especially bad. I'm strongly opposed to it. I have a meeting tomorrow with the majority leader to discuss this. I would be happy to propose to him some amendments tomorrow that I hope will take care of the good part of this bill. There's a couple of things in here I absolutely agree with, but there's many, many more that I don't and I think are very detrimental. And I'll leave you with this thought. If you'll look at the section, and I'll find it here very quickly, having to do with the emergency assistance. I said I'd find it quickly. I have not as yet. That means I have missed the page.
Page 9.
Page 9. Thank you very much. You will notice on page 9, this is section 15, if you go down to line 18, it eliminates expenses related to starting a business, such as business licenses or occupational license. It eliminates temporary income after military discharge, which we call bridge funds, which was specifically outlined by the House Committee on Veterans Affairs in the 2005 session. It specifically eliminates the ability to provide any legal assistance. In my opinion, that is the elimination of three veterans' benefits in this amendment. That cannot be allowed to stand. So with that, I'll close my testimony and be happy to answer any questions the committee might have.
Any questions? Obviously, this needs... Mr. Chair, I just want to make sure we have the point, because I am concerned
that if we don't fix now, 2 years from now, in an anti-war environment, that if this portion that says war veteran, that can use as a discriminator for future funding. And I think I hear Director Willis agreeing with that, that that's something that just hasn't been fixed in 20 years.
Mr. Chair and Representative Boquist, he is correct, Mr. Chair. I do concur with that, and I will convey that to the majority leader. I also concur with the language relating to the Korean War veterans. There's a couple other areas in here that I do concur with. The others that I've touched on, most of the ones, not all of them, that I don't agree with, and hopefully we'll get this cleaned up and be able to put a bill here that we can all testify in favor of.
Yes, Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The last, well, just before what you just said, the comments about page 9, I just need to clarify in my mind. You'd listed three things that were in this proposal eliminated, but it looks to me like legal assistance is not proposed to be eliminated. That's not in italics. It was just moved to a different letter. So I just wanted to clarify that.
Mr. Chair and Representative Cowan, I stand corrected. I see the bolded D here.
Okay.
I apologize. I saw the bracket, and I didn't see the
right,
bolded
right,
D.
Right, right, yeah. I just wanted to get that clarified.
Not correct.
Okay. With no further questions, obviously this is ready to go, so we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3294. And we'll open it. This is the next one. 2832, and that's our spent uranium. Yeah. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2832. And Representative Shields, please. Mr. Welsh, you can stay there if you'd like.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Chip Shields, State Representative, North Northeast Portland District 43. I appreciate you and the committee hearing House Bill 2832 this afternoon. House Bill 2832 began as a way to ensure that our veterans received information about the effects of depleted uranium and received services to address those effects. And as I was getting feedback on the bill, Director Willis provided what I think is a very good suggestion to expand the scope of the task force on exposure to depleted uranium within this bill to include its possible connection to Gulf War syndrome and to allow the committee to explore the research on what some other potential causes of Gulf War syndrome might be. So, and you should have before you the -1 and the -2 amendments, is that correct?
Yes.
And so essentially this bill does two things. It directs the Director of Veterans Affairs to assist veterans of military service in obtaining screenings and treatment for exposure to depleted uranium, and it creates that task force to study the effects of depleted uranium and also potential complications in Gulf War syndrome. The -1 and the -2s tinker with the makeup of the committee, and what we've decided would be best is that the Adjutant General, General Reese, suggested that the Director of Veterans Affairs chair the committee, and that's one of the things that's accomplished within those two amendments, and that it also allow the Adjutant General to be allowed to appoint a designee rather than to be on the committee himself. I think my understanding, and Director Willis can testify about his support of the bill, but that the military department is supportive of the bill as well. And on a personal note, General Caldwell just left. I think if he was opposed, I'm sure he would have stuck around. Mr. Chair, on a personal note, my father-in-law served honorably, bravely in the infantry in Vietnam. He's about 55 now. He's a machinist, and he's losing his sight and may soon lose his livelihood. Now, my wife, a nurse practitioner, guesses that it may be because of exposure to Agent Orange. She's not sure. And so what I think, if we have this bill in place, it'll give us one more tool to ensure that the vets of this generation receive the information about Gulf War syndrome and depleted uranium they so richly deserve, so that we can take care of their health as best as we humanly possibly can. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Thank you, Representative, for bringing that bill to us. Appreciate it. Mr. Willis.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jim Willis, Director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. I strongly support this bill because it goes after those illnesses which I think fall under the umbrella of what's been described as the Gulf War syndrome. We sent a generation of young people to the Gulf in 1991 when they came out of the Gulf, whether they were serving on naval vessels close into shore or serving in armored units or infantry units, many came home and began to be ill by the thousands. The lesson that I had hoped we'd learned as a country is we can't ignore widespread illnesses on behalf of our veterans in a wartime situation, as we did with the radiation sicknesses from the ABON testing, and as we did with Agent Orange in Vietnam, Thailand, and other places, including Korea now. So here we are, 2007, with these troops who fought in 1991 and are very ill, and it's broader than depleted uranium. We, if you'll recall, in that war we sent in and did a huge bombing attack before we ever launched the ground forces. We don't know to this day what all we blew up and went into the air that then our infantry and armored went into. We do know that they set all the oil fields on fire, and that our people ingested that the whole time they were on the ground and the whole time the fields were burning. So it just makes common sense that those kinds of chemicals and toxins in the air made a large group of people very sick. We need to identify what are called the presumptive illnesses that fall under that umbrella, and we need to give veteran service officers and the federal VA the ability to make compensation awards for claims associated with those illnesses. And for us to study that at our state level with this type of task force is the right thing to do, even if in the end our report results in a memorial directed at the United States Congress. That's my testimony, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, to answer any questions anyone may have.
Any questions for Mr. Willis?
No, I just have a point because Representative Schopfer is waiting on time. What we're talking about here in modern weaponry is the 20-millimeter and 25-millimeter chain guns that we use on the Bradley fighting vehicles and Marine Lab and other vehicles like that. Because it's a light weapon and it's designed to take out enemy armor, is that we have ammunition that is actually coated in this and blended into it, so it makes it harder material for penetration. Typically, you only see it in major wars, like we just had a major ground war. But interestingly enough, in Bakaba last week, an infantry Bradley platoon was almost overrun and basically depleted its basic load in four Bradley fighting vehicles with 20-millimeter ammunition trying to hold its position. So this is an ongoing issue today, even in Iraq. And if you ever get in open combat and open warfare in the desert, say Iran or someplace like that, I mean, the Bradley fighting vehicle is, you know, the bulk of the fighting power. And so we're going to continue to have this depleted uranium ammunition used because it simply is, for a better word, in war, the best thing that punches a hole in something. The unfortunate thing is the crew that has to sit on it when they're driving around and has to pick it up and deal with it and everything else is exposed to it. And there haven't been any answers yet.
Thank you. Mr. Willis, we have a -3 amendment coming. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. I requested a -3 to combine the two, the -1 and the -2, and we had discussed bringing the bill back next Tuesday so we can have a work session and pass the bill out.
Okay, great. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, and I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2832, and we'll look forward to getting the -3s there. Okay.
People in the dark afterwards.
Thank you. Okay, thanks, Marie. Hearing on 3201, Mr. Keller.
House Bill 3201 creates a tax credit for taxpayers that provides full-time residential care to disabled veteran. Applies to tax years beginning on or after July 1st, 2008. This bill has a subsequent referral to revenue, and there are no amendments.
Thank you. Okay. Mr. Gulliver, do you want to come up and... Okay. All right. That'd be great.
Chair Barker and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Greg Warnock, Oregon War Veterans Association. We'll try to be as brief as possible here. This particular bill has a couple of purposes. One is to provide an incentive to a higher level of care for disabled veterans who desire to be in a long-term care facility or to acquire long-term care at the home level. There's a variety of ways and methods to get long-term care, and one of our witnesses here will discuss that further. So the purpose of this is to get a higher level of care, but it's also to provide a means to allow veterans to stay closer to home. We think that offering an incentive of a tax credit, $2,500 tax credit, to people who are qualified to offer long-term care services to bring in a disabled veteran will allow the proprietor of the long-term care or the operator of the long-term care facility to allow a veteran, a disabled veteran, to take a bed that comes available. Right now, the way this is, for the upper level of providers, the providers that offer a higher level of care, if a bed comes open and there are three people in line for that bed and a disabled vet is one of them, chances are he will not get that bed. Somebody with better financial means will get that bed. So what we're trying to do is provide an incentive to the proprietor to say, who typically does have a patriotic perspective and wants to bring on a veteran into his facility, may do it because of a small monetary incentive. That's the purpose of this bill.
Okay, thank you. Questions?
Right. Thank you, Chair Barker and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Rob Johnson. I'm representing the Oregon Healthcare Association. We're a statewide trade association that represents long-term care facilities in Oregon, including senior retirement communities, assisted living and residential care facilities, skilled nursing facilities, and licensed in-home care agencies. We'd like to offer our support for House Bill 3201. Our members are those included in the definition of residential care in the bill, and it would benefit our members would benefit from the tax credit proposed. The service to Oregon's veteran population on the part of our members is extraordinary. Because of Oregon's model system of home and community-based long-term care, many of the veterans that they serve reside in assisted living or residential care settings specifically. However, Oregon's nursing facilities serve a paramount need in Oregon's spectrum of health services, providing care and support to the most vulnerable of Oregon's veteran servicemen and women. The exact number of veterans that are served in long-term care facilities in Oregon is a very difficult number to nail down accurately, but at the community-based care level, the federal VA indicates that it pays benefits to approximately 1% of Oregon's assisted living and residential care residents. Assuredly, the actual percentage of community-based long-term care residents in Oregon who are veterans is higher than 1%, but that's the data that we have from the federal VA. Similarly, the number of veterans served in Oregon's nursing facilities who receive Medicaid benefits is just over 1% of the aggregate nursing facility resident population, according to Medicaid cost reports, which again is the data that we have. The tax credit proposed would help long-term care facilities in Oregon who serve veterans to lower the cost shift to private payer residents that occurs because of insufficient Medicaid rates. Although the percentage of veterans as a part of the whole long-term care resident population is small, the impact of facilities who serve veterans would be great. I appreciate the opportunity to testify and be happy to address any questions.
Thank you. Any questions? Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Barker. Committee members, for the record, I'm David Gulliver from the office of Representative Donna Nelson. Representative Nelson regrets that she's unable to appear here personally. She just would like to offer her support for this bill. It's a very important bill, and it's a simple bill that will have a powerful impact, and she urges your support. Thank you.
Thank you very much for bringing that up. Thank you, panel.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, at some point, I'm just curious if somebody could be able to put a number on how many veterans might take this up. So we possibly send it to revenue and we have a grasp of what it is we're doing.
Mr. Warren, do you have any idea how many veterans would might take advantage of this?
The answer is no. Okay. However, revenue did work on some figures in 2003 for us. They have some figures or can manipulate additional figures for the committee. So we're hoping that we can pass from here and bring that to revenue. We'll have those figures at that time.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. McDonald and Mr. O'Reilly, please. And we do need to be out of here just right at 3 today. So.
My name is Matt McDonald, United Veterans of Oregon. Mr. Chairman, the only question I have about this bill is I know there's already a tax credit for disabled persons. I just would like to have the committee compare the tax credit from the Department of Revenue now with this one to make sure that this one is necessary. I don't know what that tax credit is at this time.
Okay, thank you. Mr. O'Reilly?
Chair Barker, members of the committee, my name is Kevin O'Reilly. I'm here representing the members of the Oregon Paralyzed Veterans of America, and we fully support this bill.
Okay, thank
you. We think
you.
Getting that kind of tax break to providers would be useful in serving those members who are not only elderly but disabled, severely disabled, and help them stay close to home or even in their homes. Thank you very much.
Any questions? Okay, thank you very much. And we've heard testimony in other committees, and especially in some of the more remote areas where the facilities are dependent upon, the Medicaid payments and so on are not enough, and that this something like this could help. I'll close the public hearing and open a work session. This has a referral to revenue.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3201 to the Committee on Revenue with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Schaffler moves House Bill 3201 to the Committee on Revenue with the due pass recommendations. Is there any discussion?
Just very quickly, Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
I was trying to recall from last time. I think the number is around 1,000 or 1,200 individuals. So the revenue isn't, I don't think, too large, but I do think it's something Revenue Committee needs to research
for
LRO, do an analysis of, as requested by MAC, too.
Okay, thank you. Could you call the roll, please?
Boquist.
Yes.
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 Representative Shopper?
Aye.
Excused?
Chair
Barker. Aye. Motion carries. And the work session on House Bill 3201 is closed. No further business to come before the committee today. Thank you, committee. We're adjourned.